Welcome to the third dialogue discussion in this series. I'm Nick Benedell, the founding director of the Gordon Institute of Business Science. I facilitated these discussions while former President Kgalema Motlanthe and Rolf Meyer, a director at Transformation Initiative, were our hosts. These discussions were hosted in collaboration with the Kgalema Motlanthe Foundation, the In Transformation Initiative, the Hans Seidel Foundation, Democracy Works Foundation, and the Gordon Institute of Business Science. The topic for this discussion, hosted on the 31st of August 2020, was aimed at building a capable state. The rationale behind this is based on the fact that the South African state faces major challenges delivering services to its citizens, particularly during this pandemic. The fiscus is under extreme pressure, and in broad terms, the government acknowledges the need to reform and improve delivery. This discussion was focused on the role of the state and considered how the state should be structured in an efficient and effective manner. During this discussion, consideration was given to how the state should be held accountable. The discussion further assessed the newly announced district model, as well as building state capacity and the link between policy formulation and execution. Two panelists for this discussion were Professor Mark Swilling, Professor of Sustainable Development at the University of Stellenbosch, and Mr. Mvuso Mncimang, the Chair of Corruption Watch South Africa. In this podcast, they outlined their thoughts on how South Africa can continue to build a capable state for all South Africans. I hope you enjoy the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, Nick, and morning, everyone, and welcome to this webinar on building a capable state. The National Development Plan, I think it's chapter 13, emphasizes the need for a capable state. And as we know, the early days of our democracy, there was need for the transformation of the old apartheid state, and therefore there was all-around agreement that an acceptance that deployment, informed by political considerations, would be part of that endeavor to transform the state. But that tactical approach has now been treated as though it's permanent. And it has led to the instability of the state, precisely because the interaction and the roles of the political principals and the administrative heads was never clearly defined. And the fact that senior managers are essentially appointed by line function ministers as political principals has led to a very high turnover at the senior management level in most departments and has therefore contributed greatly to the instability of the state. The other element to it that we need to ponder is the cooperative relationship between the three spheres of government. And I hope today's webinar will help clarify those questions and come up with a way forward, because the NDP is thin on real concrete practical steps that needs to be taken. It does allude to the need for a strengthened role of the Public Service Commission, but that's about it, yeah. So with these few remarks, Nick, I welcome everyone. Lord Hain, Peter, you most welcome. And Jackie, you welcome from this far-flung place in Sweden. And of course, Rolf, you most welcome as well from Namaqualand, and I warmly welcome our panelists and all participants. Thank you very much, Nick.
Can I ask Mark Swilling then to give us his input?
Okay. Good morning, everybody, from a very chilly Stellenbosch with snow on the mountains. Thanks for this opportunity to contribute. Drawing from the work that I did in 2017 on state capture and the Betrayal of the Promise report, I really have three points I want to make. The first point is that we can't really talk about rebuilding the state without understanding the political coalition that's going to drive it. So after 94, the ANC was the political and organizational linchpin of the coalition that Kobisi Jonas describes in his book between labor, business, the black elite, and communities. When Mbeki gave his speech in 2007 at Polokwane, that was the first real explicit indication when he of something going wrong when he talked about the failure of BEE. The Zuma era was really about reinventing the ANC as a kind of rubber stamp. So it remained a political linchpin, a rubber stamp for state capture, and the organizational center shifted into the shadow state. And violence became increasingly significant in maintaining allegiance. The post-Zuma CR era was a return to the idea of the ANC as the political and organizational linchpin, but was subverted, as we've seen, by persistent corruption, which is unsurprising. But if you look at countries like Greece and a couple of other places, when you combine state capture with austerity, what tends to happen, and I think we've seen it happening now with VBS, is that instead of looting the state starts to get used to loot society. So there's a shift in the nature of corruption, and that can't happen without intensification of violence. So this is really underpinning the questioning taking place about whether the ANC continues to be a viable political and organizational linchpin for the kind of political coalition that needs to drive state rebuilding. So my second point is how we conceptualize the state if that new coalition does come into place. And in my view, we have to shift from an instrumentalist conception of the state captured in that early book, that early manual on the state of the 90s called The State Machinery, to shift away from that conception of the state to a relational view of the state. And that's necessary because, as we know, the word governance has replaced the word government over the last few decades in response to rising complexity. But the result has been a loss of directionality. So how do you reconcile complexity and directionality? And amongst various progressive political projects around the world, that really boils down to what Bob Jessop in his latest book refers to as the governance of governance. And essentially what that means is, without trying to reduce complexity, which would require quite a lot of violence, you want to nevertheless have the capacity for directionality when we face the kinds of gigantic challenges that we currently face. And that essentially is leading to the emergence of a new set of public institutions whose primary capability is facilitation of partnering. And for me, the Economic Development Partnership under Andrew Borrain's leadership in the Western Cape is a good example, and I think PPGI is another. So I think, and when we start talking in those terms, we are shifting out of the instrumentalist conception of the state into one that kind of respects the fragility of institutions that the notion of machine does not allow. And then we start valuing people and we start thinking in a different way. But there are three dimensions to that, which I'm unashamedly taking from Andrew's work, which is shifting from a disabling to enabling state. And this really boils down to the state as enabler of development by people, by communities, by businesses, rather than as the service delivery agent. And that's a key shift. And it means accountability downwards and outwards rather than accountability upwards to the Auditor General and politicians and inwards. The second shift, it would be a shift from a disorganized to an effective state around facilitated partnering as a primary focus in order to overcome siloism, intergovernmental rivalry, and municipal parochialism or boundaryism. Basically, the ethos in the public service is don't mess with my mandate. And we have to shift to we're all part of the system and let's make it work. And then thirdly, there needs to be a shift from a socially distant state to one with heart and soul. And this means finding a way to reconcile a top-down authorizing environment with a bottom-up mobilizing environment. At the moment, we operate on the assumption that this is a zero, on the assumption that this is a zero-sum game. You can't have, you can only have one or the other. And that's really at the root of some of our problems. And then finally, I would say that there are three strategies when we start thinking about rebuilding state institutions. The first one is cynical, which is state institutions are beyond salvage. They're just pretty useless and they must get out of the way. And the best thing you can do is have austerity to cut off the oxygen. And it's maybe a better word for it is asphyxiation. And although people are not explicit about this, essentially those many who support austerity actually are doing so because they really hate these institutions and how inefficient they are. The second is resurrection, and this is premised on a combination that we can train a new cadre of people like we did in the 90s to go in with ideals and kind of turn these institutions around. And the third is parallelism, which is this idea of building a new generation of institutions in parallel to the old ones, which are going to take a long time to transform. And as a, you know, I'm on the board of DBSA, and we've spent quite a lot of time this last 18 months setting up the infrastructure fund, which is a blended finance vehicle using public finance to leverage private sector finance. And I think, and that's an example of this new kind of institutionalism, which is emerging as we search for institutions that can spend money on scale, which is obviously going to be absolutely central in our post COVID recovery mode. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks very much, Mark. Vusa, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Nick. Because of the instability of my network, the site or whatever is causing problems, I thought it would help for me to just keep the video off. I am myself, not my wife speaking on my behalf. I start off with what Mzugisi Kobo wrote in Conversation in February this year, where he defines the core function of a state as that of having to mobilize resources to meet its developmental challenges and manage long-term social and economic change. Further says that the state must value innovation, human capital, and merit. It must emphasize economic performance, education, and innovation. What the NDP as chairman, is it Comrade Motlanthe has indicated, speaks to this subject. There is a deficit in the capabilities of the state currently, and this is what is retarding progress. What's clear to everybody is that a capable state cannot operate freely and autonomously if it's not freed from the narrow ideological interests of the parties at play. Now, as far as our state is concerned, I will identify the tripartite alliance as whatever its historical pros were. The cons right now is that it is preventing optimal cabinet selection. The composition must satisfy the ideological interests of the allies. And so that limits the choice, not necessarily to the best available personnel, but to those who are who satisfy this this group. You have to back this thing up. Something called the deployment committee. I would say before we even get to that section that this has to be dismantled. That would ease things quite a bit. But also, because of these constraints, ideological interferences, you get an inflation in the size of cabinet. So you have deputy ministers who are a very expensive and unaffordable luxury. You have the civil service itself. For all I know, if it wasn't for the lockdown that prevents people from going to nice places.
Sorry, it's Kalyana from the Zoom call. Yes.
Sorry, can I continue?
It's Karina trying to connect Temba. Please go ahead.
Oh, I see. So I'm saying lockdown has happened with the dire consequences that we are all aware of. Those who are in the private sector know what the meaning is in terms of employment because they've had to cut back staff while in government, people are busy fighting for increases in staff and high cost of living adjustments and so on. So that's really part of this problem. It's a cushioned group of people. You then also have the civil service itself. I talked about the minister. Importantly, it distorts the strategic decision making. So you can see, for instance, there's so much pussyfooting around the disposal of SAA, the frustrations that the board as SABC is experiencing because it has to have some little conversations with not just the government but Luthuli House. So. These are things that need to be changed. These are very, very serious constraints to develop. But what's to be done very quickly? I think 5 minutes is a short period of time. Yeah, so I don't know how far I am with my 5 minutes, but I was saying the party is very interventionist and it is causing problems for effective performance of the state because of the reasons that I have indicated. I'll be happy to discuss this thing further. That's really total of my input now.
Thanks very much, Mavuso. You were crystal clear, so both in terms of content and sound. And to ask Mavuso, as the sole standing survivor of the original panel, if there's anything you'd like to say in closing. And then I'm going to call on Ruf, who's been quiet, and then maybe President Motlanthe, if you'd like to make a closing comment, you're welcome. So Mavuso, do you have anything you'd like to summarize or share as a last point?
Well, firstly, really to thank you sincerely for inviting me to be part of this group. Lots has been learned by myself in it. 3 points that I would like to raise. We wouldn't be talking like this if we were not faced with the pandemic, I think, of corruption. In 2007, the change in leadership of the ANC and, of course, of the state was ideologically motivated, never mind that it was by and large misconceived, misdirected, but it was a trade unionist communist party wishing to change a person who had brought in Kia, Trevor, and things like that. This thing, the factions are what rules the roost today, or because it's more than one. Now, the faction must always wear the clothes of ideology. So there is a It's important to talk about these two things, factionalism and corruption, because the solutions are different. You've got to understand that the factions of today, as opposed to the earlier factions, have to do with a desire to have access to resources. That's the main motive. So to the extent that it exists as a faction in a party, somebody, I think it was somebody said, the solution in dealing with a faction requires strong leadership. Firm leadership will deal with that aspect of the problem. To the extent that it has achieved access to criminality, that's, we need to talk about an NPA and other criminal justice systems. They must function properly. These things achieved would assist in the building of a capable state. Second point is, although this may be futuristic, I think it's real. We must allow ourselves to discuss the cost of government in South Africa. There are three tiers, national, provincial, and local government. You know, just think about how things are replicated in the different factions and how costly it is to do that. I think the time must come when this must be challenged. Whatever brought it about historically related to the existing, to the circumstances at the time, they have changed. I know you don't like changing constitutions all the time, but it is important because it's just too costly. Even the most efficient administration of this bureaucracy would be just too much. It inhibits, certainly it detracts on the building of a capable state. Too much money goes into these things, even if they were not corrupt and so on. I think the third point relates to the electorate. A government that doesn't function efficiently to the satisfaction of the people is usually removed when the time comes. But I guess South African society being what it is, this inequality that is talked about actually inhibits, it cushions a government that may be inefficient, incompetent, because there are people, the ones that we disregard, and they are the ones who vote the government into power. They don't have these worries that we're talking about. I think it affects them. Everybody is affected by corruption and so on and so forth, but they don't see the solution in the same manner as people sitting and discussing around here do. How does one activate, how do you make the electorate respond to good and bad governance as should be? Thank you very much. That's all. And thank you again for giving us the opportunity to be here. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Mavuso. Thank you very much. And just so you know, we will give out a summary of it. It's a sort of Chatham House set of rules, but we will pull together from the recording. Thank you, Karina, for your work in the background. And thanks, everybody. I mean, I always fear that, you know, we talk and then what happens, but we have tremendous networks of influence between us. So let's get on with it. I do think we're in a moment that is really, really vital. If we don't get the state institutions functioning, there can be no economy. And I always think about the infrastructure we need, the institutions we need, and the individuals. And you're right, Kalema, to remind us about this next generation. We'll pick that up. But thank you, everybody, for taking part. We're on time, and I look forward to, like you, I'm sure, to get on with a productive day's work. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks, Nick. Nick, first of all, thank you very much to you for facilitating this discussion. I think it was a rich and in-depth discussion, and thanks for your leadership in doing and conducting it. The background to this dialogue was probably the call that the president made on PPGI in April. In other words, during the first month of lockdown, we had a virtual meeting with him, and during that meeting, I recall it very clearly. He made a number of points, of which the need for the country to build a capable state was one. And that was indirectly a call also on PPGI to come forward with ideas and how to take it forward. So that is, I think, where this dialogue idea for this particular subject originated. So I'm very happy from that angle, at least, that we have fulfilled our responsibility as far as that is. And I think today's discussion had a lot of ideas that we can take forward and we should take forward. The question on the how, I think we must ponder on that a little bit. We had a wealth of experience. I just counted, Mavuso as a previous DG, Roger, Andrew, Leona as either DGs or DDGs. So there's a lot of experience that we have heard from and others that are specialists and experts. But I think in a way that we also have to take this forward in accepting that not all is lost. When Mavuso was speaking about his days as DG at Home Affairs, he took over a department at that stage that was pretty run down. This was probably around about 2006, 2007. And he left behind a few years later a department that was well run and capable of doing what was supposed to be done. At that stage, as far as the services of that department is concerned. What I'm saying is that I think not all is lost, and we have to look at what can be revitalized, if that is the right word, in building the capacity of the state like the president wants it to be, and like all South Africans deserve it to be. And maybe we should bring this experience that we have heard from today, but also others. And Mark made the point about we need some young voices. especially also from, I would say, middle management civil servants, people who are in the government service and who have aspirations, I'm absolutely sure of that, and ideals. And we have to bring that on board and see how we can take this forward. So maybe in conjunction with President Motlanthe and others, we have to think about how to actually build an idea that we can take forward conceptually and maybe give it to the president in response to what he was calling upon in April. Thank you very much for today.